everyone, welcome back to this Foot Femme Reflect podcast. This is part two of the three-part series of the 1971 Women's World Cup. Really, really interesting chat with Chris Gill and Leah about their experiences in Mexico, where they were treated like celebrities, rightfully so. Unfortunately, their experience wasn't quite the same when they got back to the UK. When they participated in this World Cup, neither Chris Gill or Leah were even 16 years old. So that is quite incredible to go so far away at such a young age to represent your country. Like I said, this is the second podcast in a three-part series, so the last one we'll be talking about their experiences returning after representing their country in the World Cup. Enjoy the podcast. Hi again, Chris Gill and Leah.
Hi.
Hi.
How did it come about that you three ended up playing in the World Cup? That's quite an amazing thing. Chris?
Well, for myself and Leah, we were playing for Harry's team, Harry Batt. We were playing for Chiltern Valley. But the reason we were all so young is because I think some of the players he asked that were older couldn't go, or they were threatened that they would be banned from women's football, so they backed out. And in reality, I think we were probably quite, you know, obviously we were young, and I think we were probably Harry's project further along, you know, in a few more years. But as it happened, we were asked to go, and we went. And with Jill, he was scouting round, and he saw Jill playing in a tournament, and so that's, we were asked, Harry and his wife came to our parents and asked if we could go, and luckily for all of us, our parents said yes. Yeah, right place, right time.
How young were you?
Leah was 13. Jill was 14 and I was 15. You know, we were quite young for such an amazing experience, but that's how it was and that's what happened. We were all obviously good players, but we were still of a really young age to take on such a task. And as it was, all of our team were very young. There was only two over 20.
Wow. So it was because of Harry Batt, but where did that chance for him come from to take a World Cup squad to Mexico, Leah?
Okay, yeah. Harry had already taken teams abroad. In 1969, he took a team to Italy, and that was a European Cup. And in 1970, he took another team to Italy. And so he had experience, and his sponsors at the time and for ours for Mexico were Martini Rossi, the Italian drinks company. So they had sponsored all his teams all the way through. So he had those connections. And that sort of set the store when they went to Italy in 69. That was successful. England did very well. And so on and so forth. So came 71, the businessman involved and had seen how well women's football had been taken in Italy, decided Mexico was worth a punt, I suppose, and their love for football just completely embraced the tournament. So he was a real maverick. Harry, he was an incredible man that had great vision and really felt strongly about women playing football and would have been perfect in today's climate.
So just for a little bit of background info, can you explain just a little bit about why it was unofficial, Jill?
It was unofficial because the WFA or the FA didn't recognise that it was a legal competition, basically. It wasn't, we weren't affiliated to that competition. So, you know, that they were apparently in the throes of putting an England team together, but they hadn't done so at that time. And Harry, as Leah was saying, was a maverick and had connections, and he put the team together himself and organised it, and that's how we went. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been represented out there in this World Cup. Shortly after, when we came back, the official England team was put together. And so, you know, that's why it was unofficial, because they was very slow at recognising the competition and getting their act together, basically. You know, we were, some of us were banned from playing because of our involvement in that competition.
Yeah, so when you went and did the World Cup, it was during, just at the end of the ban of women's football, wasn't it? The official ban for women playing football in the UK. And that meant that you couldn't train on any official pitches, and obviously you couldn't go and represent England in the World Cup.
Yeah, that would be right. We think we might have been quite instrumental in getting that ban lifted, because it was such a big tournament, such a big event, and it was purely women's tournament. It wasn't connected to any men's tournament at the time, and the crowds and everything that it generated just showed that women had a place in football. You know, women's football was there to be played. And I think that helped to spur the FA to lift in the ban. I'm pretty sure it was, you know, it brought it to the fore again.
Definitely. In the World Cup then, which teams participated and who won? How did you do as a team? Chris?
Well, unfortunately, we didn't do as well as we would have liked, but I think really the other squads had seen a lot more in women's football than we had in general, because we hadn't had been given the ability to do certain things other than when Harry took teams out previously. So now the Italians were there, they were semi-professional. Then there was Argentina, Denmark, France, and the host Mexico. And I think a lot of the other teams, they traveled around, and it seemed that just before the World Cup, a few months before, the Italians had gone over to Mexico and had the, you know, the chance to play games and acclimatise and see what was what. So, yeah, they were further ahead than us in everything. But, of course, you know, we got there. We all knew how to play, but we didn't have everything that they had. So we had to just take it in our stride and get on with it. But by the time we played France, because we were in the league, there was two separate leagues, and we were in with, unfortunately, Mexico, the host, and Argentina, so both Latin American teams. And by the time, at the end of it all, they had a fifth and sixth place game between us and France. But by then, we only had about eight fit players. Yeah, we had to borrow three Mexican players. So it was really a token game. So that was hard. And France won 3-2. So it's hard really to generalise how it would have been if we'd played them.
You borrowed players?
Yeah. Well, it was kind of a hastily addition game. It wasn't really supposed, you know, but I think because of all the attention and people enjoying watching, they suddenly decided to put on a fifth and sixth place. So that's what they did. And, you know, nobody likes playing for fifth or sixth place. Nobody likes playing for third or fourth, do they? But that's the way it was at the time.
Uh-huh. Denmark won, didn't they?
Yeah, they were outstanding, absolutely outstanding. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think I've seen, you know, they were just brilliant. And I think that was a shock because I think the Italians thought that they were going to win the tournament. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the best team won.
What about getting to Mexico? How was all of that? You were all so young. How long were you there for? How did you get there? And also who funded the trip? Was that Martini and Rossi as well then? Leah?
Yes, Martini and Rossi sponsored the trip. They paid for everything for us, hotels, flights, our kits, everything. And we actually left on Thursday, the 5th of August, 1971. Mm-hmm. And we took a flight via New York. So we went into New York and then from New York to Mexico City. And it was on a Pan Am flight. And we came back on Tuesday, the 7th of September.
Wow.
So it was a month, 28 days, whatever. So we were there a long time. And we had to, and you needed to acclimatize. I think that's the other thing. Mm-hmm. People have to remember for us going over there, you had to acclimatize to play at that altitude. Mm-hmm. So that's another reason why Mexico and Argentina would have felt far more comfortable in that climate.
Mm-hmm. And how about, so you went for a month. I mean, I suppose that did coincide maybe with school holidays, but you would have all been at school then. So what was that like? I mean, were your family and your school okay with you going to Mexico?
Yeah. Fortunately, it was in the school holidays. But even if it wasn't, I'd have still gone anyway. But there you go. And my parents were very keen for me to go. I didn't have a passport at the time, so my dad had to drive me to Peterborough to get a passport and all that. So yeah, it was so fortunate for us that we were at school, because I think, as Chris said earlier, that the girls that were working couldn't get a time off, especially a month. But mm-hmm. one girl, Jan, she actually quit her job to go.
Wow.
So, yeah, she was that determined. And, you know, she was a fantastic player anyway. So she was dead keen to go. Sacrifices there were made. Mm-hmm. But for us, it was a no-brainer, really. It was a competition of a lifetime, you know. We went into it in the unknown, really. We didn't realize what type, you know, how big this competition was. It was just amazing. Mm-hmm. It was massive.
Mm-hmm. When you got to Mexico, what was that like? So you kind of left the UK and people probably weren't really talking about it. Like you just said, it was all a bit of an unknown. What was it like when you actually arrived in Mexico, Chris?
Well, we set off just in a group together, didn't know what to expect. Some of, you know, all of us, it seems, now we've looked back on it, all of us had never been in a plane before. So,
wow.
Yeah. And it was very rare that people did go in planes at the time. I know it doesn't seem like, well, it does seem like that now, but I mean, normally. When we got to New York, we all had our walking out clothes on, and somebody, a woman in New York, thought we were a choir. She obviously hadn't heard us sing. We had about 7 hours in New York waiting to get the flight to Mexico. So we were all really tired when we got there. Mm-hmm. And it was late at night. And I've said this so many times, it's like a cliche, but we come down the aeroplane steps and there were all flashlights and everything like that. And we were all wondering what was going on. And I said to someone, I think there's someone famous on the plane. And that's how we didn't know that it was us, and we were famous from the moment we got there till the moment we went home, like instant stardom and something that none of us had ever had. Wow. It was like a dream, really, but you couldn't make it up. If you wrote a fairy story about it, people would think.
In Mexico, the reception was massive, I suppose. How was that experience for you, Leah?
Well, As Chris said, it started as soon as we got into the airport. So as soon as we arrived in the airport, there were crowds. There was not lots of crowds, but there were crowds there.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately you were in this surreal world where autographs were asked for. We were taken to our hotel by coach, Hotel Royal Plaza. It was the hotel our England men had stayed in the year before in 1970 World Cup for mm-hmm. the men. And it was just, it was overwhelming the whole time. And there was always crowds then when we were training, we'd have to sign autographs, constant photographs. We had a newspaper reporter with us all the time taking photos.
Wow.
Be it training, be it on a social event, it was completely surreal. And even the night we arrived, some of us were taken to the TV studios and appeared on TV.
That was the night you arrived after you'd just done all that travelling?
Yes. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
So it started as soon as we walked down the step of the aeroplane.
Uh-huh. Yeah, what about for you, Jill? Was it the same? What about the locals? So they were all excited to have you all there. They wanted autographs from you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, as I say, very surreal that we were mobbed, really, everywhere we went. And yeah, they used to come into the hotel and ask for autographs and stuff. And Chris was quite popular at that. She was quite freely with her autograph.
And football as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, that everybody took to us, the English girls, women. And we just thought it was fantastic. And you know, I think we were very approachable, you know, we were, you know, thought this was great and, you know, welcomed them all. Something that we'd never experienced before and something that, you know, we just were enjoying of that time. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where did you play the matches and did you have crowds at the matches, Chris?
Well, all our games were at the Aztec Stadium because we were in the group that the hosts were. Mm-hmm. And the first game against Argentina, there was a big crowd, like 40,000.
Wow.
But when we played Mexico, it went to 85,000 because
85.
People had got the bug for the game. And I mean, the Mexicans, every time the Mexicans played, well, especially in the final, in the final when they got to the final and played Denmark, it was a sellout completely.
Wow.
Over 110,000 people.
Wow.
Which is a record, but of course, because it was unofficial, it's not accepted as being a record crowd for a women's game. But I don't think it'll ever be beaten, but
mm-hmm.
it doesn't go in the record books, which is
yeah.
It's a shame for the Mexicans and the Danish girls that played in it.
So were the matches televised in Mexico as well?
I think they were, but we've had quite a lot of trouble getting any footage. But in the 80s, there was a massive earthquake in Mexico City, mm-hmm. and a lot of the city was destroyed. Including, we think, our hotel was destroyed because it's not there anymore. And so we found it difficult to get footage, but I have seen some of the final,
mm-hmm.
and one or two bits and pieces, you know, sometimes you can see it on YouTube but one of our girls, Val,
mm-hmm.
She had a cine camera with her,
mm-hmm.
so she's got some, because I mean it sounds weird now, but cine cameras were quite rare as well in those days, mm-hmm. and she actually borrowed it off of someone in England and took it to Mexico. Mm-hmm. So we've got footage of us on the top of a pyramid, women, you know, that sort of thing. And she's got a few little bits inside the Essex Stadium.
Okay, what about the other teams then? Did you like have much interaction with the other teams? And I think you said earlier that Italy was a semi-professional team. Like, what was the standard like of the other teams? And were they sort of better supported by their home country?
I would say they, Italy certainly would have been. And they were used to playing in front of crowds. So for them and Denmark, I'd say, and even in France, I think women's football was recognised far better than it was in England. Mm-hmm. I think Mexico and Argentina, Mexico by nature of it being a home tournament, were embraced. Mm-hmm. Argentina were to a degree there, but again, I don't think they were so much at home. Mm-hmm. So it's the actual Italian, so the group two, which was Italy, Denmark and France, they played at the, is it Jalisco Stadium, Guadalajara? Mm-hmm. So they didn't play in Mexico City, they were in Guadalajara. So we didn't have any interaction with them.
Okay.
We would have only, and we didn't have interaction as such with the other teams until we played them. And then after we met, the Mexicans came to see us at our hotel after we played them. Mm-hmm. And the Mexican people, the Mexican team, but the Mexican people so friendly and they just embraced us. So, but yeah, from a football perspective, we were very much on our own training, preparing ourselves for the games. And didn't really, there was one TV event where all the teams were there early on before the tournament, where we were all on the TV. So that, yeah, there was one time when we were all together, but we didn't actually interact.
And did you do anything else on the trip in Mexico that wasn't football related? Like you just said about the pyramids.
Yeah, we had something going on all the time. If we weren't playing or training, well, we used to train in the morning at about 7:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And then if we weren't playing, then the day was ours. But we often go swimming at this private members club, I believe. I'm not quite, can't remember now. Leah would probably remember
it's it. It's Cuban club.
The Cuban club, that's it, yeah. And we'd spend most of the time there swimming and everything. But then we were invited to the British Embassy for a cocktail party. We were invited to an English pub, a theatre. We saw the play there at the theatre, to a market. And then there was the canal boats. What was that one again?
Xochimilco.
Xochimilco, yeah. We had the car factory that the girls don't remember.
What was that?
But I do. They must have got sloshed and don't remember it, but I do.
That'd be it. Yeah.
Weren't you 14 and 15? Am I right there?
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I was joking when they were sloshed. They weren't really.
No, we didn't drink.
No.
What was the factory?
It was Avocar.
It was eggnog.
It's like
you have at Christmas.
We'll pass you by, hello, I'll tell you that.
Very nice. I had one last Christmas, thanks to Leah.
Yeah. The nod to Mexico, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. We were very well looked after, and we went to the hotel owner's house as well, in their swimming pool, and was treated to lunch and everything. Yeah, we were celebrities, really. But, you know, we didn't look at it like that at the time. But looking back now, yeah, we were quite celebrities of that time. Wow. It was a big event for them out there.
So when you were in Mexico for 1 month, did you have much contact with home? And was there much reported about the World Cup in the UK, Jill?
No, because being 1971, we didn't have any technology as there is today, i.e. telephones, Skype, Zoom, whatever, nothing at all. So there was no contact for the whole time we were there. The only time you could would get in touch was send in a letter. But the only time that anybody at home would have known what was happening out in Mexico was there was little snippets of reports of what of our game out there, but and I mean a very tiny little snippet in say the Daily Express, the Telegraph, national newspapers, and my mum had kept those, and it was really just the basic, no big reports, no photographs. In Mexico, yes, we had all that. It was very well televised. It was in all the newspapers, big colour photographs, and we were followed around with the news, you know, newspapers and everything. It was big business out there. But back home, we had no contact whatsoever. So when we left England, that was it until the time we returned. Nothing at all. It was great.
It's quite hard to imagine now, just letting your 13-year-old, 14-year-old, 15-year-old daughter go up to Mexico for a month with no contact.
And saying that, you know, I'd only known of Harry and the girls probably about 2 or 3 weeks before we went. Within the July, I was spotted and picked to play. And we went out there in the August. So it was a rush to get my passport. And my dad just trusted Harry and the team and going out there with all the girls. You know, he just thought it was a great opportunity, that one that I shouldn't miss. So, no, very supportive. But, yeah, today, you know, you'd have to be, everything would have to be checked through and, and your DBS checked and all that and everything. But, no, nothing like that in those days. Very innocent we were.
How about your relationship then with Mexico and with the Mexicans? What was that like? Because obviously you were there for quite a long time. You were there for a month. And their press, like you said, were following your story. And they're following you in Mexico. So what was your relationship like with them, Leah?
The Mexican people were just so friendly and embracing. Obviously, we hadn't threatened them on the pitch when we played Mexico. But we'd built up a fantastic relationship with anyone that came to the training ground, anyone we met, wherever we went. We'd try and communicate with them, autographs would be signed. So we had a great relationship with the Mexican people, and the Mexican team themselves, after we'd played them, came to visit us at the hotel that we were staying at. And on the day that we actually played Mexico and we lost, when we came back to the hotel, Royal Plaza, I think it was, whether it was some young supporters, they were Mexican people that had left us this, well, I suppose it was a message on a card, and they'd written, England, you have lost the play, but you have get the heart of Mexico.
Oh.
And Keith, Harry's son, who was the mascot at the time, still has that banner card that was written. And that's very important to us now, reflecting back, because it actually says a lot about what happened while we were there for that month. So, yes, the football was the most important thing going out there. And we loved our training. We loved playing our football. You know, we were sad that we hadn't, disappointed that we hadn't won. Like any team, you want to win. But actually, looking back now, we can be very grateful for the relationship we have with the Mexican people.
What was the experience like returning to the UK? So you've just participated in the World Cup, which is like the height of football. What was it like when you got back to the UK? What was your reception like, Chris?
Well, there wasn't a reception when we came home. We got off the plane, and I think there must have been one photographer there because he took a pic. Two of our girls had plaster casts on their legs coming back, and he was there for that particular reason, just to take a picture of that.
Oh.
And I've spoken to Jill and Leah about when we went back to school, and not one of our schools mentioned it. So, so there was nothing. There was no media attention. There was nothing. And that's why I think, apart from the fact that myself and Leah and Jill kept in touch because we carried on playing, mm-hmm. some of the girls packed up
mm-hmm.
Because they were banned and they gave up football completely.
Mm-hmm.
Some tried to carry on and then packed up early. And everybody seemed to bury the story, and we never spoke about it very much.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about it now because people are interested, but there was no media attention. There was no platform, so we didn't speak about it. We buried the story. And we've all said it's normally our families or partners that bring the subject up to other people, and they are so interested. And we go, oh, yeah, you know, and then we can say, well, I did do that. And then, you know, subliminally, I suppose it was that we thought, I don't know, not that we'd done something wrong, but it's just we thought that we shouldn't need to talk about it.
Yeah.
And yet we should have been proud of it, really, as our families are. So
it's just the FA has just silenced you all, has not recognised the World Cup. And that meant for all of that time, none of you really spoke about it with anyone, did you? Even, well, maybe amongst yourselves you spoke about it, but like you said, you would not bring it up to other people. And it's World Cup. Come on.
I know. It seems ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
It does seem ridiculous that we didn't. And I'm glad that we are now. You know, it happened. We did it.
Uh-huh.
That's the way it was. And if Harry hadn't have taken us, nobody would have gone and represented. So I'm proud of it, and I'm proud of all the girls, and I'm very proud of Harry. And that's all that matters. Yeah, and if young people hear about this story and it gives them encouragement, then great.
Mm-hmm. It is an amazing story. Amazing. This is not something that happens to anyone, that you just participate in the World Cup and then nothing is said about it for years and years and years. And at least now you can talk about it, and hopefully there is going to be a big fuss about it because it's such a big deal and it's so important for women's football and for all the girls that play football now to know about the history of women's football and the fact you all played in Mexico.
Yeah.
We're just proud that it has been recognised now. It's got its place in women's football history now, whereas it would have been lost,
mm-hmm.
and it was lost for 47 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's just taken it all that time for us to sort of be proud of what we did, really. We were proud to go out there, but coming back, like you say, it was felt as though we'd done something really wrong. We shouldn't have done it,
mm-hmm.
but you know, we loved the football, and that's all we wanted to do was football. You know, we didn't want to get into the politics of everything.
Yeah.
And football was all we wanted to do. You know, we are just so grateful that, you know, we've been able to tell our story now. I mean, it was only a couple of years, probably 3 or 4 years ago now, that Leah and I and Chris met at a friend's barbecue, and we just said, oh, have you still got your medal? And basically that was it, you know. The girls we were with knew we'd played, but we never spoke of it at all. Never. My daughter didn't even know I'd played out there till she's 33, coming up 34 now, but it was only when all this 47 years later, when we started talking about it in Sheffield, that she realised how a big event it was. She knew I played football.
Mm-hmm.
And everything, but obviously didn't know the extent of what we did out in Mexico or what Mexico was about.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't even tell her about it. So
Wow. That idea is just crazy. Mm-hmm. All that happened and nobody talked about it. And Leah, overall, how would you sum up that experience?
Incredible, surreal, fantastic, a privilege, very proud to have played, be it unofficial, we were still known as England out there, and we did our best to shine the light on women's football in 1971 in Mexico City. So just incredible, and so grateful for Harry for having that belief in all of us going out there. Mm-hmm. We were very, very lucky.
Yeah.
Right place, right time, as Chris said earlier.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And be it still unofficial and unrecognised by the FA, I think that's a silly term. You officially went and played for England in Mexico in the World Cup, so.
Also, something I'd like to say, and we said it earlier, but 1972 becomes the year of official FA, WFA recognition. So there's a connection, and yeah. And we feel perhaps Mexico was that connection. That women's football needed to be taken seriously in this country.
And I'd just like to say, I think it was Leah's brother that said, how could we be unofficial when there was nobody, you know, it wasn't as if the FA or the WFA were doing anything. So how could we be unofficial?
When there was no official team anyway, because it wasn't recognised, as England didn't have a team until 72 onwards.
Yeah,
because how are they ever going to deny an 85,000 crowd stadium, an event on such a massive scale? Okay, actually, maybe we should recognise women's football again after 50 years of pushing it under the carpet.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, thank you all.
Thank you.
Pleasure.